it's a political moment and environment that's not conducive to advancing the rights of LGBTQI persons at the international stage.
A decision by council member to renew this mandate would send a clear message that violence and discrimination against people of diverse sexual orientation and gender identity cannot be tolerated.
The resolution doesn't create any rights, just basically the continuation of the work of the independent expert.
Visibility is power, and our power is exactly what they fear.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. 50 are arrested in Istanbul for attempted pride. China's war on gay male erotica continues, and the UN Human Rights Council votes on an independent queer expert. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Ava Davis.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 5th, 2025. Activists attempted pride in Istanbul on June 29th, and as many as 50-plus were arrested for it. That's been the annual exercise since Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan banned pride events in 2015, a year after he took power. Riot gear-clad police blocked the streets to confront the LGBTQ protesters and their allies trying to march. Police chased down and captured several people in the city center for simply carrying rainbow flags, according to some accounts. Erdogan's anti-queer behavior has only gotten worse over the last decade. He regularly calls LGBTQ people perverts. When he declared 2025 to be the year of the family, he insisted that the very existence of queer people undermines traditional family values. Governor of Istanbul, Davut Gül, is marching too, in lockstep with Erdogan. To Gül, what was once one of the region's largest peaceful pride gatherings undermines social peace, family structure, and moral values. He declared, "No gathering or march that threatens public order will be tolerated." Same-gender sex is not specifically illegal in Turkey. However, strong societal taboos in the Muslim-majority country prevent sexual and gender minorities from gaining any meaningful civil rights protections. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have each charged that the rhetoric and actions by Erdogan and his subservient government officials virtually endorse discrimination and violence against LGBTQ people. Meanwhile, queer European advocates are still buzzing about Budapest's Pride Parade the previous day. An estimated 200,000 people defied a similar ban in authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban's Hungary.
In China, at least 30 more women were detained during an apparent second wave in the continuing crackdown on gay male erotica, known as Danmei, or boys' love. Dozens of women were arrested earlier this year for writing and posting on the Taiwan-based adult fiction site Haitang Literature City. The stories, penned mostly by women in their 20s, are popular with young female readers seeking to challenge traditional gender roles. To Chinese authorities, it's considered obscene content. Two lawyers representing some of the detainees told the New York Times that as many as 50 writers may have been arrested during the past few weeks. The Haitang Literature website allows some writers to earn modest tips from readers, and Chinese authorities tend to particularly target them for arrest. Punishment often depends on whether writers can repay the money they earned. Some of the site's top authors have received varying sentences of 1 to 5 years in prison. Homosexuality was decriminalized in China in 1997 and declassified as a mental disorder in 2001. However, the government has continued to deny LGBTQ people basic civil rights and to suppress positive cultural representations of sexual and gender minorities.
President Donald Trump signed the controversial Budget Reconciliation Bill into law on U.S. Independence Day, July 4th. Republican majorities in both houses of the U.S. Congress complied with their party leaders' wishes despite the opposition of most of the country's people. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office concluded that what Trump called his Big Beautiful Bill gives huge tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires on the backs of people who access government-sponsored Medicaid health care and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. The Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law says that close to 13% of LGBTQ adults in the country rely on Medicaid as their primary health insurance provider. That's about 1.8 million people. Many of them will be among the estimated 10 million who will now lose their coverage. The only silver lining was that the Senate parliamentarian determined that blocking the use of federal funding to reimburse medical care for transgender young people could not be a part of the bill under the chamber's legislative rules. The Williams Institute finds that women and transgender people will be the most affected by cuts to SNAP. The think tank that focuses on public policies impacting LGBTQ people says some 250,000 trans individuals and 1.3 million lesbian and bisexual women were able to access SNAP in the past year. An estimated 7 million people in the U.S. will now either lose SNAP benefits entirely or see their benefit amounts severely reduced. The law also substantially increases funding for the Defense Department and for Homeland Security, which includes ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That will put even more of the often masked and unidentified military-style officers on the streets of U.S. cities to detain and disappear people based on little more than racial profiling.
The U.S. Supreme Court capped its 2024-2025 session this week by threatening the rights of transgender people in four more states. Justices told the appeals courts with jurisdictions in Idaho, North Carolina, Oklahoma, and West Virginia to reconsider rulings in support of trans rights. Their directives follow last week's Scrimeti decision to uphold Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. The High Court said that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit needs to reconsider its ruling against an Idaho ban on gender-affirming health care for minors. The justices already ruled last year that the state could continue enforcing the law even after that appellate court ruled against it. Following suit, the Supreme Court majority ordered the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals to review its decisions that neither North Carolina nor West Virginia could deny coverage for gender-affirming health care to all transgender individuals. Justices also told the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit to reconsider a decision blocking Oklahoma's law barring transgender people from changing gender markers on birth certificates and other official government documents. Announcements on these cases had been postponed pending their ruling in the Tennessee trans health care case.
Looking ahead to the next U.S. Supreme Court session, bans on transgender young people participating in school sports programs will be on the docket. Justices announced on July 3rd that they'll hear two cases filed by trans students, their families, and advocates challenging laws that ban their participation. Idaho's restrictions require intrusive gender testing to determine a female competitor's eligibility. In the other case, a transgender middle school athlete is challenging West Virginia's ban on trans competitors. Rulings from the High Court are expected to be announced in June 2026. There are similar bans in more than half of the 50 U.S. states. Republican majorities in both the U.S. House of Representatives and Senate
have thus far unsuccessfully tried to pass similar laws at the federal level.
Finally, Australia's national men's field hockey team took to the pitch wearing rainbow socks to support a gay teammate during Pride Month. Midfielder Davis Atkin was outed to his coach at the University of Canberra by a team psychologist in 2021. Atkin told the queer athletics site OutSports that the incident put him in a pretty dark place. Atkin has now played for the Australian national Kookaburras team close to 20 times. A photo of the team posted on Instagram depicted all of them wearing rainbow socks. The multi-hued hosiery-wearing Kookaburras overcame a two-goal deficit in late June to defeat England during an International Hockey Federation Pro League tournament in London by the score of 4-3. Atkin posted a photo on social media with a pride flag draped around his shoulders, captioned, "Being able to run out onto the pitch with pride socks together as a team was something truly special. The inclusivity, the support, and the joy in this group made it all feel surreal. You can't be what you can't see, and even something as simple as rainbow socks can be a powerful sign to someone out there that they are seen, valid, and belong."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending July 5th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You just call on me, brother.
The global struggle to secure human rights of LGBTQ people has a powerful advocate at the United Nations, but will that always be so? That advocate's voice was nearly silenced this week when the time came for the United Nations Human Rights Council to renew its mandate. This Way Out's David Hunt talks with a human rights activist who is anxiously monitoring the vote.
Might expect human rights to merit unequivocal support at the United Nations, especially at the UN Human Rights Council, based in Geneva, Switzerland, where 47 member countries hotly debate efforts to promote and protect human rights around the globe. In reality, majorities are often thin, with a surprising number of nations sustaining or even voting no on resolutions advancing human rights. In October 2024, for example, fewer than half, just 23 nations, endorsed a one-year extension of an international fact-finding mission to Sudan, where a civil war has created an ongoing, dire humanitarian and human rights crisis. 12 nations, including China and Indonesia, voted against the resolution, and 12 others abstained. If there's a strong consensus to be found of late, it's on the margins of the UN, among a broad coalition of nonprofit agencies, urging the Human Rights Council to extend the mandate of an independent expert committed to protecting LGBTQ people from violence and discrimination. The vote on the mandate's three-year renewal is expected to be close.
Tear that falls from your eyes, oh, you have me.
I'm David Hunt. For all its work as a peacekeeping body, the United Nations has something in common with military organizations, a love of acronyms. In this program, I'll try to keep them to a minimum. But one acronym you'll hear over and over is IESOGI. IE is short for Independent Expert. SOGI, S-O-G-I, is short for Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity. At the UN, IESOGI is a man, South African scholar Graham Reed, and a mandate, a position created under the UN's Special Procedures Mechanism to ensure, monitor, advise, and publicly report on matters related to human rights violations based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The Council created the three-year position in 2016 and renewed it twice, in 2019 and again in 2021. This week's vote, to renew the mandate for another 3 years, comes at a fraught time for the global LGBTQ movement. Fabiana Label is a program manager at the International Service for Human Rights in Geneva, an organization that supports human rights defenders around the world through training, activism, research, and legal advice. ISHR works on the front lines in some of the world's most challenging areas, promoting rights and accountability in autocratic nations, strengthening laws and systems in struggling democracies, and supporting human rights activists in regions enduring war, violence, and targeted oppression. Label has a front row seat to this week's pivotal vote at the UN Human Rights Council. She spoke with me from the Council's headquarters in the Palace of Nations, a sprawling complex overlooking Lake Geneva, built to house the League of Nations after the First World War. I asked her about the upcoming vote to renew IESOGI and why some members of the Human Rights Council are expected to oppose the resolution.
This time around, we have what we call a technical rollover, which is basically a very short resolution that just states what the mandate is and then asks for the renewal. One of the main objections has always been that it's a myth at the same time that this is a mandate that's driven by what they call Western values, despite it being a resolution that's presented by seven Latin American countries. There are a number of grounds on which this is objected, from kind of religious claims around religious practices, claims around cultural norms and family values, which are absolutely not in conformity with UN human rights standards. There are many different claims, but they come from a place of intolerance and a place of discrimination against sexual orientation and diverse sexual orientation and gender identities.
Do you expect this to be a close vote?
Yes. Yes, yes. It's a political moment and environment that's not conducive to advancing the rights of LGBTQI persons at the international stage. Like, what we want is to secure that this mandate continue its very important and key work, because the resolution doesn't create any rights, doesn't propose any new language. It's basically the continuation of the work of the independent expert. We expect a close vote, yes. And also, beside the vote, there's also the attempts to weaken the text, attempts to make the empty the resolution of meaning and relevance. So, yes.
To counter this opposition, a coalition of more than 1,200 NGOs, non-governmental organizations, signed a statement of support for the renewal of IESOGI. Trans activist Best Chitsanjupong read the statement at a meeting of the Human Rights Council in late June.
In every region of the world, violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity persists. In 2016, the UN Human Rights Council took definitive action to systemically address this abuse, creating independent expert on SOGI. Since then, mandate holders have sent over 171 communications documenting allegations of violations and carried out 10 country visits. A decision by council member to renew this mandate would send a clear message that violence and discrimination against people of diverse sexual orientation and gender identity cannot be tolerated. It would reaffirm that specific attention continues to be crucial to address this human rights violation and ensure that LGBT people are in fact free and equal in dignity and rights. We urge the council to ensure we continue building a world where everyone can live free from violence and discrimination. I thank you.
In time, you know, everything we've lost comes home again, and I will grab onto your arm a little stronger than we were before.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. IE Soji, the United Nations independent expert on violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, has worked since 2016 to advance the human rights of LGBTQ people around the globe. It's critical work in an increasingly fractured world. 64 countries still outlaw same-sex sexual activity, and 10 criminalize diverse gender expression and identities. But efforts to secure the human rights of LGBTQ people have improved in some countries in the past decade. Since the IE Soji mandate was established in 2016, 14 countries have decriminalized gay sex. The United Kingdom, responsible for colonial-era anti-sodomy laws around the world, apologized to Commonwealth leaders in 2018, urging repeal of those laws. Fabiana Label, a program manager for ISHR, the International Service for Human Rights, says the independent expert's work is needed now more than ever.
I think the ISOG's mandate is crucial because it deals with issues that perhaps couldn't be dealt with at the national level. Another fundamental aspect of the mandate is the mandate's ability to comment on policy and legislation, and particularly question governments when laws and legislation are violating the rights of people in general. And I think the ISOG has also done an incredible job in addressing those situations and commenting on legislation and submitting information and asking for clarification. And this is another aspect of the mandate, which is really important. The fact that the mandate has visited so many countries also is, the visit itself provides a platform for civil society organizations. The recommendations that come out of those visits are a great tool for civil society organizations to work on, to follow up on, to keep, you know, pushing their governments.
The coalition of NGOs campaigning for renewal of the mandate is active on social media, where the hashtag #RenewIESOGI is used to publicize informational webinars and online petitions. I sat in on one of those webinars hosted by the Carr Ryan Center for Human Rights at the Harvard Kennedy School last week. Jessica Stern, a Carr Ryan Senior Fellow and formerly the State Department's top envoy for LGBTQ rights, recalled the hard-fought effort to create the IESOGI mandate in 2016.
We started with joint statements, voluntary ones, to test whether any government would even dare to say our names in the halls of power. Then we secured the first resolution at the Human Rights Council, recognizing violence and discrimination based on SOGI. I will never forget it, what it was like to be in the room that day, watching a third of the room walk out in protest during the first panel. And then watching them reappear moments later on the mezzanine, watching from above because they couldn't stay away. That moment made something clear. Visibility is power, and our power is exactly what they feared.
Another featured speaker, scholar and activist Ignacio Saiz, summarized some of his findings from a 2024 report on IE Soji.
The mandate has significantly expanded the body of knowledge on violence and discrimination based on SOGI. What so many people have valued is how it's looked not just at specific forms of abuse, you know, like conversion therapy or denial of gender recognition. It's looked at the root causes. And that's quite unusual for a UN human rights body. So it's really shone a spotlight on patriarchal gender constructs, legacies of colonialism, religious fundamentalisms, and how religion is politically manipulated for certain ends. And that systemic analysis, that systematic analysis, has enabled it to take on some of the deeper cultural narratives that pathologize, that demonize, and that criminalize queer lives.
Back in Geneva, Fabiana Label awaits the vote at the Human Rights Council with grim determination.
It's hard to be optimistic at this point in time, particularly because what we've seen are challenges to multilateralism. That is what we're seeing. It's not only about the UN, it's about norms, standards, guarantees at the international level that are, you know, are being disregarded. So it's hard to be optimistic when the whole system is not responding the way we would have expected to respond, and that states are actively working against it.
A victory at the UN for Ai Soji would be welcome news for human rights activists around the world, a spark of hope in challenging times. I'd like to thank Fabiana Label at the International Service for Human Rights for speaking with me for this program, and the Carr Ryan Center at Harvard for its public education efforts. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
The air is clear with our loved ones close. You can pick out every star without a telescope. So beautiful to see how we have changed. In time, you know, everything we've lost comes on again. And I will grab onto your arm a little stronger than we were before.
This just in. The Human Rights Council renewed the mandate of the Independent Expert on Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity on July 7th. There were 29 votes in favor of adopting the resolution, with 15 voting against and 3 abstentions. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Ava Davis and John Dyer V and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. Kansas, Bill Withers, Foster, and Michael Shines performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KCMJ Colorado Springs, Colorado, WGGT Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 4NSA Noosa Heads, Queensland, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.